The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
And it's another week on The Weekly Connect. This is the show where you get to talk about the issues that matter to you if you're blind or partially sighted. Hello, I'm Stephen Scott. And over the course of the next hour, we're going to be discussing some of those issues. Yes, in particular, audio description in the cinema. We hear from Maya Liam Williams, who went to see the movie The Girl on the Train this week, but there was no audio description.
If I'm watching it with my friends and the audio description's on, I go, oh, this is getting good. You know, so you miss out on a lot of that, I think, but I don't realise how much I miss out until it's turned on, which is quite interesting.
Also, we get into the kitchen with Gina Parker, who told us about the handy gadgets and handy little helpers that make cooking easier for her.
How much sugar do we need, Eleanor?
Do we need any white sugar, right?
The brown sugar. 6 ounces of soft brown sugar.
6 ounces.
And as we celebrate Get Online Week this week, we meet the team at the British Computer Association of the Blind, as they are our Society of the Week.
We are a self-help group of blind and partially sighted computer users who want to promote the use of computers through people in work and in leisure.
That plus your comments coming up on The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
So, yes, this really is the show that you can talk about the issues that matter to you if you live with sight loss, or you've had sight problems or blindness since birth, whatever it might be. We are willing to talk about the issues because that is what The Weekly Connect is all about. And that is why this week I thought we'd start with a topic around white canes. It was White Cane Safety Day at the weekend just there. And it's a really interesting topic for a lot of blind people because, you know, there's so much debate around white canes. And I thought it'd be good to bring some of that up here on the programme. Do we like or dislike the cane is the question I'm asking. And as a white cane user myself, I must admit I kind of sit on the fence a little bit on that one. Some days I like it because it helps me get around. Some days I really dislike it. But what do our panel think about all of this? Well, I've brought together three people, three white cane users, who all have interesting opinions in all of this. Madeline Mann, Mohammed Atif and Fiona Dunn join us here. Thanks for joining us on the show, guys.
Pleasure, Stephen.
Pleasure.
So, the white cane, do we like it or do we dislike it? Well, we're talking about it, of course, as part of what was White Cane Safety Day very recently. Let me start with Mohammed Atif. Do you like or dislike the white cane?
I can't really say whether I like or dislike it, to be honest. For me, in my life, to get around mobility-wise, it's a necessity. So whether I like it or dislike it, I have to use it because I do a daily commute to work from, say, Luton to St Pancras, which is quite a substantial station with various tourists and bags and prams and stuff. And big burly blokes that I don't want to walk into and get punched out by. So a cane's there to tell people as well as guide me that I am visually impaired. I have a little bit of sight, so I can use that sight to know where I am, take account of my surroundings, etc. And also to let people know, just in case I do knock into something or someone, that I don't do it on purpose, as it were. When I was going through mobility training, I was very reluctant to use a white cane. I went to a mainstream school, so everybody was sort of running about and everything else, and I just wanted to be in with the crowd. So I was a bit reluctant to use it, and if I'm honest with you, I'm still a little bit reluctant to use it, especially around my local area where I live. But it's a necessity when I come to work. It's not like a fashion item or anything like that. It's just something I have to use whether I like it or not.
So you're sitting on the fence a little bit on that one. Okay, so not like, not dislike. Okay, Fiona Dunn is on the line. What do you think?
I need my white cane and I don't like not using it, especially a lot of the time if people guide you, they don't really know how to guide you properly on steps and things, which isn't, you know, that's how life is. They haven't ever been shown. So if you don't have a cane, then you could end up falling down the stairs or not feeling as safe or as confident if someone was guiding you. But I use it a lot, well, every day I use my cane walking around my local area, going into central London. I do like it because otherwise I probably wouldn't have the confidence to go out, especially into somewhere as busy as London. And as Mohammed said, it does show people that you're blind. What I don't like is, it's more of a social thing, really. People see a cane and they assume you immediately need their help just because they've seen you with a cane. And then they grab your arm, or even more weirdly, they grab your cane and they try to guide you by sort of pulling you along with your cane. And I don't like that, but that's not the cane's fault. That's people who don't know what to do and don't know how to ask if you need help and just think it's okay. So I don't like that, but I do. I like the fact that we have canes, that they give us such independence.
Yeah, I think it's two separate questions, isn't it? Because, you know, you've got the like of the cane or the dislike of the cane, and then the like and dislike of the consequences of using the cane. I think those are two separate questions. But you do see...
They are.
Yeah.
But also, for some people, it's brilliant. They see me walking along with a cane and they'll move out of my way. And if I realise, I'll say thank you to those people. So they're brilliant and they see the cane and they do kind of the right thing, but other people don't. So it's very much an individual thing, you know, as to what people do.
Okay. Madeline Mann is also with us. You're a white cane user as well. Do you like or dislike your cane?
With me, it was a bit of a journey, to be honest. When I was 10, 11, and I was introduced to using my white cane to walk around, I had a lot more sight than I have now. And when I was walking around, I didn't like it. It was kind of telling everybody, oh, there's a blind kid with a cane, although I actually was in a school for blind and partially sighted people. But still, I didn't like it. So I was called out by teachers quite regularly to tell me that I should be using the cane also for my own safety and so on and so forth. But now I actually love my cane because I know that's the only way I can get around. And no, it's kind of no hate and relationship anymore. I like my cane for what it is and learned how to become a lot more independent with my cane.
Well, so you've got really emotional about it. You love your cane.
No, well, like my cane.
Like your cane. Okay, so that's two likes and I don't know. Okay, that's interesting to start with. I guess that using the white cane is interesting. Mohammed, I'll come back to you on this one because I guess a lot of us struggle to use the white cane because of the social stigma. Is that something you've found?
I think so, because most of us, especially at, say, teenage years, you want to kind of blend in with the crowd, as it were. Your friends are sort of just walking around as they do in groups and stuff like that, and you just want to be on a level par, I suppose, where using a cane could sort of single you out. Like, you know, for example, like a sore thumb. You know, you just stick out and everybody notices you, and it's difficult to say, really, because I know it's a necessity, and I do like it in that sense, that it helps me to get around and stuff like that. But in my younger days, I was, to be honest with you, I was very, very reluctant to use it because I wanted to be in with the crowd. And you are most more noticed by a cane. People do move out of your way and things like that. Some people give it to the last second until they do. Back in the day, say 10 years ago, I think people were a bit more alert to the white cane, where now everybody's got their your phone, your tablet or whatever, and they're tapping away and just not aware of their surroundings. Whereas before, everybody was used to be alert and move away in good time, I suppose. But there definitely is a stigma attached, and you are singled out by using a white cane, I think.
Okay, does that create a new like or dislike then, Fiona Dunn? Is it a case of, well, should we like or dislike the reaction we get from people who see us with our white canes?
This is a really interesting point that Mohammed's made, because I went to a special school for the blind, secondary, and they discouraged us to use our canes around the school and only to use them when we went out. But when I left, it left me with a lot less confidence using my cane than I otherwise would have had. And Muhammad talks about sticking out like a sore thumb, but if you're blind, you kind of do anyway, especially if you're going to be accidentally bumping into people because you're not using your cane and you're just walking without it. You've got a sort of a justification. No, not that's the wrong word. You've got a reason why those things have happened, if they still happen. I mean, hopefully they'll happen a lot less when you're using a cane. But if things still happen, then people will at least know the reason why. And I've had that reaction. I do swimming, and you obviously can't really take your cane in the water, however much you love your cane. You know, and you do get these people say, why don't you look where you're going? And I'm like, well, it's a bit difficult. And then they kind of go, oh. And I never have to say that when I'm using a cane.
I find it very interesting. Sorry, can I? I find it very interesting that in the school you've been discouraged to use your cane. Really?
Yeah, that was. And I've heard from people still there that the children are still discouraged from using it. Within the school, whereas another place that blind adults, they are encouraged to use their canes all the time, which I think is far more sensible.
But you don't think that's a good thing?
I think it's a good thing that people should be using them.
Mm.
Otherwise, you can leave an establishment that's supposed to be teaching you independence, and if you're leaving not very confident about using a white cane, that's not good.
No, I completely agree, actually. You could walk around, say, a college or a school because you know those surroundings and you can do that without a cane. But when you go out into the big wide world, it's a sighted world we live in, and you need to, I mean, if you're going to a school where there's blind and vision impaired people, they should be teaching you the independence to, when you leave that school, that you're going to be able to stand on your two feet.
And let's face it, injuries can happen everywhere. No, I think the cane is as necessary to walk around.
I think so.
Yeah, although I wouldn't... I mean, I'm at home at the moment and I don't use my cane around the living room and things like that.
No.
But I think school corridors and things are bigger. I can in the boarding houses, I can understand more, you know. Although some family I go and see, I do use my cane in their house because it's a bigger house and I feel more confident doing that. But when I go and see my parents and things like that, I don't need to use my cane in the house. I think it depends on where you are, on the area, doesn't it?
So we've talked about using the white cane, and obviously there are so many issues and things we could talk about around using it and attitudes to people who use it. But what about the alternative? And the alternative, of course, is a guide dog. Have any of you considered that?
I actually had a guide dog and used a guide dog for many years and then had to go back to the cane. And that was quite an experience in its own. You're quite quick when you walk around with a guide dog, and it's a totally different feel to your mobility. There are other issues, perhaps, but then going back to the cane was not so easy. With a cane, I feel myself slower and I have to look for the way. But then it's easier to get from A to B because I don't have to think, can my dog get access to where I'm going? I've done both, and I must say for myself, I think I prefer the dog for the mobility. I think it's good to experience both, cane and dogs.
From what people have told me that have had guide dogs is that when using a cane, you have to concentrate 100%.
Yes.
You know, whereas with a guide dog, you can be in your own thoughts and the dog will sort of guide you to where you want to go. Not like a GPS, but at least it will know what surroundings it's in or where he needs to go. If you're, for example, if you do a journey every day, he'll know where you need to go. But with a cane, you have to be wary of lampposts and people and trolleys and prams and all kinds of stuff. So you can't be in your own thoughts when you're walking about. You have to have full concentration at all times.
I think people stop you a lot more when you walk with a cane than when you walk with a dog because you're so quick and the dog knows where you are walking, and you know where you are going, and you don't hit the obstacles so often as you do with a cane. With a dog, you just walk.
Yeah, I like to know what I'm walking around, because I think it's different with a dog, but I like to know what landmarks and things I'm walking around, because I like to be in charge of where I'm going. So a cane is great for me. And you know, sometimes, yes, I might have to be thinking where I'm going, but I don't want to have to walk along talking to something all the time, you know, a dog. I don't think I'd feel comfortable doing that. And some people do, and they love it. But it's just not a problem you have with a cane.
So, interesting you bring that up, Fiona, because, you know, Mohammed and Madeline, they were almost talking themselves out of their white cane by the sounds of it. Because interestingly, you know, Madeline, in your case, you've experienced a guide dog. You've both picked up on the negatives of the white cane, yet you still use it.
Yeah, and there are definitely advantages of the white cane. As Fiona just said, I love the fact that I can just fold it up, put it away, and forget that I have it for a while.
I think, to be honest, it's more of a necessity rather than an enjoyment. I mean, if you had a choice, if anybody had the choice, they wouldn't carry a white cane around or even have a guard dog or hold a harness. If, obviously, if anybody had a choice, they'd be walking around just as any sighted person would. But it's just a necessity that we are visually impaired. We need this for mobility, for confidence, and also to let people know that you're visually impaired. I mean, it's not a fashion item, though, is it? I mean, for example, it's not like a... I mean, if you can get an Adidas or a Nike cane, just imagine that, eh? a Reebok-branded cane, that'd be great, but unfortunately not. So you've got pink, orange and blue, black and whatever colour you've got.
Whatever goes with your wardrobe.
Whatever goes with your wardrobe, so, you know...
Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about your thoughts on the white cane. Thank you for that. And please do share your views as well. weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Do you like or dislike your cane? Some interesting views there. Thanks to Madeline Mann, Mohammed Atif and Fiona Dunn for joining us on the programme.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Yes, this is the programme that talks about the issues that matter to you if you're blind or partially sighted. If you've got an issue you must tell the world about, then let us know. Get in touch. Email weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. And if you are on our podcast on Audioboom, you can also find out how to record your thoughts using your iPhone. And you can do that just by going to our podcast and searching for how to record on your iPhone. Yeah, we took a lot of time working on that title, didn't we? Right, let's ask you the question we've been asking you now for a couple of weeks. Where in the world are we? Every week our trusty microphone is picking up all kinds of lovely sounds. Where is our microphone this week? That's quite a noise, isn't it? Can you guess where it is? You know, I've been easy on you the past couple of weeks, I think. But I'm not being as easy on you this week. Well, I will give you a clue. Well, it's a great place if you love animals. That's a very good clue, actually. I might just leave it there. Yeah, it's a great place if you love animals. I've been to this place. That probably isn't much of a clue for you. I have been to this place. And it is stunningly beautiful in every sense. And I don't often mean in the sight sense. I mean the smells and the sounds. The sounds in particular. That's what drew me to this place. And it's why it's our Where in the World this week. Because the sounds of this place really caught my attention more than anything else. So where in the world are we? That's your question this week. Right, let's pause for thought, shall we? Yes, every week now we talk to guide dog users who are telling us their story of life with a guide dog. And this week we hear from Karina Gregory, who talks mainly about her second dog, Tanya.
Hello everyone, my name's Karina and I'm 31 years of age and live near Coventry in the West Midlands. I am currently on my third qualified dog. My first one, unfortunately, was rejected after 5 weeks. It was a very difficult time for both of us, as he was very strong-willed and very determined. It was a very sad day, but a great relief when he went back to guide dogs. I then had to wait 12 months for my second guide dog, who was a female, and she was a golden lab retriever, quite a big girl, and her name was Tanya. Tanya and I worked together for 6.5 years until she really slowed down, to the point that I was getting more and more irritated with her, and it was unfair to keep her working. So, in my mind, the right thing to do was to tentatively suggest retirement. My only concern was, because of the travelling that I do and the need to be able to get around, was that I needed to keep the dog working until a replacement could be found. I was sat at work and the phone rang. Now, for some reason, I couldn't answer it, and one of my colleagues did. And she said, "Karina, it's a call from guide dogs." I initially thought, well, they'll just be ringing to catch up from earlier. But no, they were phoning to say that they'd found a potential match after 2.5 hours. I was absolutely stunned. The following day, they brought out a golden lab retriever called Orca, who I'm very proud and pleased to say is now my current dog. Now, there are some similarities between Tanya and Orca, which is fantastic, but also I was quite amazed at the difference between them both. The one thing I learnt with Tanya was that she was always right. And I'm convinced she could read my mind. She was very determined and very wanting to please me. I'll give you an example. One day in Birmingham, she was trying to take me back to the station. I was telling her no, that wasn't the right way. So in the end, she sat down and refused to move. This was after 2 weeks of being together, and essentially my first proper working guide dog. So you can imagine the state of mind I was in. What do I do? Is there a drop in front of us? Why won't she move? A new dog in a strange city that won't move. So what I decided to do was to place the ball back in her court. And I said to her, "Okay, you find a way." At which point, she started taking me back down what I presumed was an entry to a shop. So I stopped and asked somebody, who advised me that the train station was just down on the left-hand side. After that, I concluded that she was always right.
Very interesting story. Thank you for that, Karina. And it really does prove the point that sometimes you've just got to give way to the guide dog. it was like that for me. I had a guide dog when I was 19, and very quickly I learned that you have to hand over the responsibility to the dog. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. But interesting story. Thank you for that, Karina, talking about your second guide dog, Tanya. If you've got a guide dog story you'd love to share, maybe your guide dog's a bit unusual in its ways. I've heard some amazing guide dog stories over the years, and I just wish I had a microphone at hand at the time. But if you want to share yours, then please do. weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Back to the other side of this story now, because earlier we were talking about long canes, we weren't talking about long canes versus guide dogs, but we did mention that topic in conversation with Madeline Mann and Mohammed Atif and Fiona Dunn earlier. Well, interestingly, Imran has got in touch with us from Glasgow. He's sent in his comments that he's recorded on his iPhone for us. Let's hear what Imran has to say about using a long cane.
Hello, my name's Imran and I'm from Glasgow, and I'd like to share my experiences of using a long cane for mobility. I've been registered blind for about 3 years now. For a long time, I used a symbol cane, which is a short white cane that you hold in front of you. It doesn't touch the ground, but as the name suggests, it is a symbol just to let people know that you do have sight loss. My vision has deteriorated quite a bit over the last 8-9 months, and I've recently had an operation on my eye, so I felt that the long cane was the best option for me. On the whole, my experiences of using a long cane have been extremely positive. It allows me to go out by myself and feel safe and secure. The long cane that I have, it's 130 centimetres long, and it has a roller point at the bottom. So I simply hold it out in front of me with the roller point on the ground, and I sweep it from left to right so I can get feedback as to whether there are any dips or peaks in the pavement or any obstacles in front of me. And this is so much better than how I used to do things, because before I used to constantly look at the ground because I was afraid that I might bump into something or there might be a hole that I'll trip over. So I must have looked really strange walking down the street with my head continuously bowed. But luckily now, with the cane, I can use that to scan the ground to see if there is anything in front of me, and I can hold my head up high so I can use whatever useful vision I have to see if there are any obstacles directly in front of me. On the whole, people have been really great when they interact with me with a long cane. When I'm walking down the street, they give me a little bit of extra room. If there's a crowd of people, they'll generally move out of the way to let me by, which is great. And they will offer their assistance if I'm getting on and off public transport. They'll say, do you need any help? Which is great. It's really good that people will do that for you. But for me personally, it is a bit of a double-edged sword, because I'm a very independent person and I'll only really need assistance if I'm in deep, deep trouble. So now, even if I'm getting on and off public transport, even if I'm just walking down the street, people will ask, do you need any help? And my standard response now is, I'm okay, but thanks a lot, thank you. And that's what I say to them. But I can't blame people for that. I mean, it is really good that people will offer their assistance. I'd rather that than them be the other way, where they're just not caring and not offering to help. There have been a couple of instances when there has been a couple of issues with using my long cane. One of these issues is pavements in some areas. There are so many potholes and raised paving stones that your cane can get trapped in. My cane has bent so many times. I've lost count of how many times my cane has bent, and I doubt very much. I mean, the cane looks straight to me, but I doubt very much it is straight, because it has bent so often. And I have managed to nick myself a couple of times when my cane gets stuck in something, and then the top of the cane is directly, well, it's just kind of like on my belly kind of area. So if the cane gets stuck, then it'll hit my belly, and you know, it's I've got a lot of padding there. You know, it's not like, yeah, I'm well padded, but still, it's not the nicest experience. Another issue is when people feel that you need help and they force their help on you. Once, when I was in Glasgow City Centre, I was walking across the street with a pedestrian crossing. So I felt the cone underneath the light, and it was rotating, so I knew the little green man had come up. So I was halfway across the street, and then this woman grabbed my arm and felt it was necessary to walk me the other half of the road. And when we got to the side of the road, she says, which way are you going? And I said, going that way. So she walked a few steps and she said, there you go. And then she left me and went. And I thought, way to invade my personal space. I mean, that was a very strange experience. I mean, that was just the once, but I think once is enough. It was really surreal, that happening. So that's my experiences. So as I said, on the whole, it is amazing having a long cane. It's given me confidence. It allows me to go out. I travel a lot, so it allows me to go anywhere that I want to go without any fear. And as long as I've got my wits about me, it allows me to go through practically any terrain.
Okay, thank you for those comments, Imran. And also thank you for getting in touch via email and sending in your comments that you recorded on your iPhone. Ooh, get you. Well, if you want to do the same, then you can head to our Audioboom podcast where you can find an aptly titled podcast episode called How to Record on Your iPhone. There you go. Simple as that. Do check that out if you would like to send in your thoughts to the programme. We really would love to hear your view and your voice on air as well. That's what it's all about. And who better to put your thoughts into words than you, eh? So get in touch. weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Do as Imran has done. Let's move on now to a film review of sorts. Maya Liam Williams went to see the movie The Girl on the Train. But the bad news was there was no audio description. She spoke to our own Laura Kirker.
I am Maya Liam, I am 23 and I'm registered blind. I went to see Girl on the Train last night and I tried to look into whether there was audio description or not. I had presumed that there would be audio description with the film. I looked on the website of the cinema, tried to call the particular cinema and then couldn't access either option, and so I settled for getting to the cinema and asking when I was there, and it turned out that it was only in a particular screen with particular films, and that for Girl on the Train and the screen we were in, it wasn't available, which meant that the film was quite difficult to follow, and I did feel like I missed out bits, which quite often happens, because it was quite a fast-paced kind of thriller type film. So I hadn't read Girl on the Train before I went to the cinema to see it. I just saw the trailer and thought, oh, that looks good, without obviously spoiling it for people that haven't seen it yet. So it's three women, all whose lives are all sort of interweaved in some way. You don't really find out how until right at the end of the film, which is why I can't reveal how. And there's one of them who rides the same train every single day, and she then sees another of these women, and she doesn't understand why she is sort of drawn to her and why she's so important that she is. The third woman, I found it quite difficult to follow what her involvement actually was. I don't know whether that was because she had sort of quite a minor role in the film or not. And I wonder if there had been audio description, whether that would be any different. The truth is, I don't know, because I don't have anything to compare it to. So they were all in the same place at the same sort of time. It was set in New York, and one of them obviously goes missing, and then it's sort of up to everybody else around who was surrounded by that person to find out what happened to her. So I did enjoy the film very much from my own standpoint. I think I could have enjoyed it more had there been audio description. You miss a lot of body language and a lot of facial expressions. And actually, funnily enough, when I watch something without audio description, I'm not aware of how much I'm actually missing. Whereas when I turn audio description on, say on my favourite soap or something like that, they then say things like, so-and-so looks towards the camera with kind of, you know, deceit in his eyes or something like that. And that's not something that I'd naturally pick up. So I don't get the same reaction as my friends. But if I'm watching it with my friends and the audio description's on, I go, oh, this is getting good. You know, so you miss out on a lot of that, I think. But I don't realise how much I miss out until it's turned on, which is quite interesting. I think it's a really good film, really fast-paced plot. If you can't get audio description, though, you might end up nudging your friend in the ribs and asking them constantly what's happening and who's talking. But actually, I managed not to do that last night. And to find out more about whether there are films that are audio described, you can go either onto the RNIB website or just ring up the cinema or email, or, you know, get in touch with your cinema via social media. There's loads of different ways to find out, and it's well worth doing, because if you do get audio description with a film, it's brilliant.
Well, some good advice there from Maya Liam Williams. And, you know, for those of us out there who use audio description, me included, I have to tell you, it is such a game changer when it comes to watching TV programmes and movies. Some of the AD out there just now is fantastic, and maybe that's a topic we should discuss more here on The Weekly Connect. What do you think? Email weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. What about audio description? Is it good? Is it good enough? Are the audio describers giving you enough information? Well, get in touch and tell us. Email weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, just a reminder as well, if you ever need information about anything relating to RNIB services, or maybe you've got a comment about RNIB, well, you might want to get in touch with the RNIB helpline. It's on 0303 123 9999. That is a fantastic number to keep hold of. Also, helpline@rnib.org.uk. Now, coming up, we are going to get into the kitchen. Getting hungry already at the thought of it. We're going to be making some Weetabix fruitcake with Gina Parker, with some help from her grandchildren. That's coming up, and we'll hear how Gina does it, even though she's completely blind. And we're also going to hear from our Society of the Week this week, which is the British Computer Association of the Blind. We'll be hearing from Andrew Hodgson and Chris Edwards from the charity. And we've got more of your comments on using a white cane. That's all coming up on The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
We all know that sight loss can affect our lives in so many different ways. Even everyday tasks like cooking our own meals can be tricky. Well, Gina Parker, who has retinitis pigmentosa, has showed us that with a little help from some handy products and her little helpers, you can be confident in the kitchen and whip up a treat the whole family can enjoy.
Right, now when we've got your aprons on, we're going to be cooking a Weetabix cake, and you're going to help me do the measuring. Just try reading that, Eleanor. What does it say? How many Weetabix do we need? 2 ounces. Now, we've got some lovely new scales here.
Yes, scales.
But we need...
The other one were black.
Listen.
It is 40 grams.
Now, we can change it to ounces. So, we know we need 2 ounces of Weetabix.
Can I do that one?
These are new scales from RNIB. And as you can hear, they're beautifully clear.
2 ounces.
The voice is very clear and it repeats. It's a beautifully firm unit. The measuring jug bowl on the top is very secure. And for those that have some sight, it's calibrated.
2 ounces.
And in pints and millilitres and things. So you can weigh and you can measure.
Gram, millilitre, ounce.
If you forget to turn it off when you finish using them, they turn off automatically after a few minutes. The next step is to put these in the bowl, and then we have to add the sugar and the fruit and the milk. That's Kathy, our guide dog. I think that must be the postman coming. She always lets me know because I don't hear very well either. Okay, now how much sugar do we need, Eleanor?
Do we need any white sugar as well?
The brown sugar. 6 ounces of soft brown sugar. So let's see how much we've got.
I'm going to do it.
Zero.
Right. So can you just tip that in there and let's see how we do.
It is 6 ounces.
6 ounces. So you can tip that in, Eleanor, into the bowl. So how much fruit do we need? Mixed fruit. 6 ounces. Now, it can be sultanas, it can be mixed fruit, it can be any sort of fruit we like. I've done it with the exotic mixed fruits this time because I like a change.
Can I put it in that?
Pop it in. That's it. Good girl.
Oh, that does look nice.
It does, doesn't it? Right, we'll pop that on there. And how much do we need, Jo? Can you remember?
6 ounces.
That's right.
It is 6 ounces.
There, perfect. Eleanor, can you see how much milk we need?
I'm putting this in.
Half a pint of milk. And any milk is okay, skimmed or whole or semi-skimmed. Are you skimmed? Can you tell me when it comes to that mark, please? The half pint mark? Can you see just there?
There's a 12 in it.
Yeah, done. Okay. We're tipping the milk onto the Weetabix fruit and sugar. The fruit needs to plump up and the Weetabix needs to soak up the milk, okay? So we give it a bit of a stir and then we put cling film over it and we leave it overnight.
After
Joe's
turn, can I
Now, magic. Here's one I did earlier. There you go.
Let me see.
Having sat in the fridge overnight.
Oh.
Right, what do you think that looks like, folks?
Good.
It looks good. Can you smell it? What does it smell like?
No, it smells of fruit.
Fruit, that's right. Okay. We're getting to the point where we need to put the oven on.
We need to get it right.
It needs to be at 160 degrees Celsius, and that's not fan oven, that's just ordinary, straightforward oven at 160 degrees. There we go. And that will heat up nicely while we're finishing off.
0.1 ounces.
The weighing scale jug itself we've actually used and got wet now. So I've just put a dish on there so that I can weigh the flour. Now I can weigh the flour straight into there.
Can I do one?
You can help me. Yep, come on. I've just put 7 ounces of self-raising flour into the soaked mixture, and we're just going to put 2 eggs in. Now, 2 beaten eggs. You can use 2 eggs or you can use 1 egg. Okay, and now all we've got to do is stir it up. So,
and then it's my time.
But gently at first, because we don't want to spray it everywhere. Paper liner. I use paper liners rather than line my baking tins myself because I can't see what I'm doing anymore. And we're going to put this mixture in a 2-pound loaf tin.
Can I lick the spoon when we're done?
I used to lick the spoon and the bowl when I was your age.
Yeah.
It looks a bit gloopy, doesn't it?
It looks like poo.
Oh, Eleanor Parker. So I'm going to put the cake in the oven now. And to do that, I will put my oven gloves on because these are actually like gloves. They're not a conventional oven glove in the sense that they're two sort of pouches joined together. These are like a pair of gloves that you'd wear in the winter. But what I like about them, and whether this is why they are supported by R&OB, the sleeve part comes quite a way up your arm. And as I'm always burning my wrists on the shelves, I find them brilliant. And because the hands are separate, you've got more control. They're very tactile, they're very sensitive. You can feel what you're doing with them nicely. There we go. I know the shelf's in the right position. That's it. That's fine. Right, now that's in the oven at 160 degrees Celsius, not a fan oven, just an ordinary oven, and it will need about an hour to an hour and a quarter. So we'll check it. Shall we check it in about an hour, children? And yeah. In the meantime, we'll go and do some reading. Yeah, would that be good? Okay, well, thank you very much for your help. That was brilliant. I think we could take our pinnies off now, don't you? Okay, it's been an hour and just over an hour now, an hour and 15 minutes, so we'll check on the cake. I'm just going to put the oven gloves back on and pull them right down. I think it will be done. Oh yes, that's perfect. So we take it out and we leave it to cool in the tin for about 5 or 10 minutes. Right, now the cake is ready, it's cooled and it's sliced ready. Shall we try it and see what it tastes like?
Yeah.
Yeah? That would be good, wouldn't it? Here we go then. Jolien, what do you think?
Yummy.
Yummy. Well, I think it's pretty evident that they like it. It's got the seal of approval of Eleanor and Jolien.
Thanks to Gina and her grandchildren there, her little helpers, Julian and Eleanor, proving that you don't have to be Mary Berry to bake a simple and delicious fruitcake. Now, you can download the recipe for Weetabix fruitcake from rnib.org.uk/fruitcake, or you can check out your latest issue of RNIB Connect magazine if you've got that. You'll find out more about the recipe in there. That's available in various formats, including large print, braille and audio. If you'd also like to find out, incidentally, more about the talking scales and oven gloves that Gina mentioned and some other products that could help you around the home, then check out the RNIB shop. That's rnib.org.uk/shop or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. So where in the world are we this week? That is the question I've been asking you. And the clues I gave you earlier were a really good clue, one of them, and the second one, not so much. The first one I said, if you love animals, this would be a great place to go. And the second clue was, I've been there. It's not much of a clue, I know. Sorry about that. Here it is again. Have a listen and see if you can guess where in the world we are this week. It's quite a noise to listen to. And incidentally, that sound is from my very old now iPhone that recorded that when I was in this particular place. And yeah, it was a really, really lovely night when I was taking the audio, recording the audio there. Yeah, tell me what you think that is. Tell me where you think it is. If you want to get in touch with a suggestion for where in the world, where are you in the world? Maybe you want to stick your iPhone out of the window and record some of the sounds of your place. Well, you never know, it might appear here on Where in the World. You can get in touch with us, weeklyconnect at rnib.org.uk. I'll tell you where in the world we are this week at the end of the programme. Now, this week is Get Online Week, and it's a great opportunity to talk about the issues around getting online if you're blind or partially sighted, the challenges, the struggles, and all of that. But how do you do it? How do you actually get the help that you need? Well, our Society of the Week this week is one charity that aims to help people all over the country to get into technology, no matter what your age, no matter what your ability, and no matter what your sight level either. They're called the British Computer Association of the Blind, and I found out more about them this week.
Hi, my name is Andrew Hodgson and I'm the chair of the British Computer Association of the Blind. We're a self-help group of blind and partially sighted computer users who want to promote the use of computers through people in work and in leisure. Our aim is to make sure that everyone can use a computer, whether they're young, old, in work or out of work, or whether they've been using a computer for 10 or more years or not at all. Some of the services we offer a peer discussion list for people to ask questions and help each other with issues that they have with computers, whether that be in work or leisure. We have our Pocket PC, which is a USB stick containing NVDA, which is a screen reader, and some software to get you started if you've not got a screen reader already. We have a website with lots of information about how to use the different technology, from screen readers to magnifiers and everything in between. And if you join as a member of BCAB, you can also access some very interesting articles that are written for the association. And also we have a helpline on the first Thursday of the month, which can be used if you've got a specific problem with the computer that needs somebody to actually help you with it.
Hello, my name is Chris Edwards, and I come from southwest London near Twickenham, and I've been a member of BCAB since its first year back in 1969. And at that time, BCAB was an organisation self-help group for professional blind people who were involved professionally in computer programming, systems analysis, and other tasks. And it was a really valuable organisation for us then. And we just shared as much information as we could. In more recent years, the organisation has changed so that it now has many people who use IT at work as a tool, who use it at home. I think, it really helped me when I was started in programming, because there were people that were able to give me assistance in how to persuade the operators that they should do changes to the printer, to print a braille. Also, there was just information that he gave us that we could share, because we did not have access to computer manuals. And so sometimes a phone call to someone and ask them, how do you do this? What is involved with that, was a real help. And I think, and more recently, it's also a social thing as well. I think meeting up with people and just informally exchanging information is very valuable. There used to be a saying that when we had seminars that a lot of the best work was done in the bar. I think it was that informal chatting with people that was really valuable, and I think it still is. So it's, I think it's a way of disseminating, sharing information and knowledge, is the way I put it. And I think that's what has been valuable to me, and I know other people in the association who I think feel the same.
It's a privilege to be the Society of the Week on this programme. If you want to get in touch with us, then our info@bcab.org.uk address is the place to find out more information, or go to our website, www.bcab.org.uk.
Andrew Hodgson there, Chair of the British Computer Association of the Blind. And that's another Society of the Week certificate on the wall. Well done, guys. Yes, if you'd like your society, however big, however small, on the Weekly Connect, if you would like that honour to be graced upon you, then you can get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you because, more importantly, and in all seriousness, we really want to feature your charity, your society, as I say, no matter how big or how small, because we want to tell other people about it. You know, maybe there's someone sitting in your area right now that could do with your assistance. Well, why not feature your society on the Weekly Connect? And you never know, you might get a knock on the door or a phone call or an email. Wouldn't that be great? Well, email weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk and we will do our best to help you out with that one. Now, earlier we were talking about using your white cane and the difficulties, the likes, the dislikes of using a white cane, the good things about it, the positives as well. Sarah's in Manchester and joins us now on the line. And Sarah, you've got a rather interesting story about using your white cane. Hi.
Hi, Steve.
So you took your white cane with you for the first time. You didn't use it, but you took it with you. Am I right?
No. I held it in my hand.
Have you used it before? Have you been trained on it? Have you just had one?
I've had one for 35 years. I haven't needed one. I was thinking about this the other day. I've needed one for 9 years, but I've never used one because I don't like them.
What is it you don't like?
I don't like the label that goes along with them.
Mm. Are you self-conscious with it?
Yeah, definitely.
Had you ever taken your cane out with you before?
I started taking it in a bag for about a year or so, but I've never actually brought it out to the world. You know what I mean? It's never seen the light of day.
But it did this week?
It did, yeah. Just because I was getting fed up with having to explain myself all the time, and I was just having a bad day, and I thought I can't be bothered with people asking me too many questions, so I just wanted to speak for me today.
And did it work?
Yes, it did. It did. Took it to the bank. The woman behind the counter was very nice. The only thing was she kept touching me. I don't know if that's...
that goes with the territory, I think, doesn't it?
I don't know if she thought she had the right to touch me then. Well, yeah, she kept stroking me. So, but yeah, I don't know. It just seemed to... I didn't feel as... I was conscious, but I didn't feel as worried about doing silly things that might make me look like I was doing them for other reasons. Like, you know, people think you're on drugs or you're ignorant or, you know, those type of things.
So the question is, the next time you go out with your white cane and you take it with you, do you think you might open up and use it?
Honestly? Oh, this is going to sound a bit negative, but no. I think that's going to take me a while.
Mm.
It took me so long to get to that stage. I think it's going to take me a while to... I think it's going to take me a while now to feel comfortable just having it as like an accessory. and, you know, and just putting it down in front of people on desks and stuff like that. I mean, it's only a symbol cane anyway. It's not actually a working cane. Is that what you call them?
Yeah, well, yeah, a long cane, yeah. But actually, yeah. You know, even so, it still carries with it the knowledge from other people, I guess, that, you know, you have got a slight impairment and that you may need some help, and if you do, when you ask for it, that hopefully will understand why you're asking.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a very brave thing to take the cane out, and you know, I've had personal experience of that myself. You know, it is difficult going out for the first time with it. I think our listeners will agree with that one. Sarah, I wish you well with it. Hopefully, you will at one point be able to use the cane fully, and I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are on that when the time comes.
Okay.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Stephen. Bye.
Well, if you want to comment on what Sarah said, if you have a view on that, then please do email in weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. You can also send us a recording of your thoughts. Do that through the Voice Memos app on your iPhone. There's a podcast about it on the Audioboom feed. Do check that out at audioboom.com or on your smart device. Before we go, just a quick reminder of where in the world we are this week. Here is the audio clue. Well, the smart cookies amongst you might have worked out that I was in Africa at the time. Yeah, I didn't specify where. I was actually in Ghana. But yeah, we recorded that late one night. Just stuck the iPhone out the window and recorded that. And yeah, it's an incredible sound, isn't it? The sound of Africa, the crickets at night. And that sound will live with me for a very long time. It's the one thing I brought back a lot of experiences from that country, but that was one of them. So that's where in the world we were this week. If you want to stick your iPhone out your window, be careful, don't drop it, but do stick your iPhone out your window and record the sounds of where you are. Well, maybe you could be our next Where in the World. That's almost it from the show this week. Just a reminder that you can get in touch with the programme at any time. Please do get in touch, because, you know, this is a show all about you. It's the issues that you talk about, and we'll discuss them right here on the programme. Promise, we will. We will talk about them. You might think, nah, you wouldn't. Well, we would. Try us. Email weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. On next week's programme, getting around A to B. How difficult is it using public transport? What's passenger assistance like for you? Well, do get in touch with your thoughts on anything relating to transport. That's our hot topic next week. Do get in touch with us. Email weeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk, or you can, of course, get in touch through the RNIB Connect radio website. You can click on the Contact Us button when you get there. That's it for another Weekly Connect. Thank you for giving us your time. Remember, Mondays from 1 is the place to be to get all the issues talked about, to get it all off your chest, the good, the bad, and the ugly of sight loss. It's what we talk about in the Weekly Connect. Do check out our show Mondays from 1 on RNIB Connect radio, and always online on the podcast on Audioboom. Thank you for listening.